You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It is Tour Live. It is Neil Atkinson with Michael Manninger, Philippa Smallwood and Leanne Prescott to talk about Liverpool women and do a season review around what went on there when they won the championship and won promotion. We've also got Emma Sanders to talk about potential transfers, ins and outs, looking ahead to the women's season next season from a Liverpool point of view. We've got Paul Dehaney to join us to talk about his wonderful work he does on Africa. Oh, yay. Very exciting that coming up in a couple of weekends in Liverpool in Sefton Park. But we will start this Tour Live talking about Liverpool's potential signing of Darwin Núñez, a club record signing, no less, Leanne Prescott. Liverpool lining up Darwin Núñez. It does appear to be happening faster and faster. It feels as though the idea of there being any other move to Manchester United, it has been knocked aside at this stage of proceedings. And there's every chance Núñez is confirmed at some point across the next 72 hours, it appears.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting signing. It's obviously part of the transformation of Liverpool's attack. I think there's been a lot said about what the evolution is going to be beyond Salah, beyond Mane, beyond Firmino. And maybe it's a change of approach. A lot of people have spoken about whether it's a 4-2-3-1 we're going to head towards. Maybe a bit more of a target man for Trent and Robertson as well in the box. Very versatile. Impressed a lot at Anfield this season as well. I think it's a really exciting signing and probably about time that Liverpool signed a proper clinical number nine.
It's one, Philippa, where, you know, I think you've always got to be careful with how we envisage sort of systems and changes. At the start of the season, for instance, when Liverpool were playing Harvey Elliott, it looked a lot like 4-2-4 at times, to be quite honest with you. It looked like there was a bit more of that going on. Similarly, at times when Jota plays centre-forward, he's very much a number nine style centre-forward, to the point that people would say, is he involved enough in build-up play and all of that sort of stuff? I think that we can sometimes get carried away with what could be, what the manager may see as quite nuanced tweaks or evolutions that we will end up describing as though the world is now a massively different place because one signing's been made.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen as well in the past, haven't we, that, you know, we've signed players, we've expected them to play a certain way. I mean, Gini Wijnaldum's probably the biggest example I've got of that, where, you know, when he was at Newcastle, you envisaged him playing on the wing for us, and he just didn't do that at any time that he played for Liverpool. He, you know, was really developed into that central midfield role. I mean, I just think, you know, from everything that I've seen and I've heard, I just feel like he's got so much to his game that we can develop him however, you know, we want to. You know, there's no set position, I think, for him that I can see him going into. You could see him, you know, playing as a nine at times. But I think it may be, you know, that the club maybe want to look at a more fluid front three where they're interchangeable, because I think that's something that we maybe did early on when we had the Mane, Salah, Firmino, you know, axis, and we kind of moved away from that. It was a bit more structured, I would say, and maybe that's something that they want to move back towards, is that, you know, players can interchange and any one of the three can be playing as the nine and any one of the three can be playing out wide. So I'm just really excited about it, to be honest. I think it, you know, if it happens, it's going to be a great signing.
It's one where, Michael, one of the things I can take from it, you look at his numbers, what's interesting is how quickly he's made certain steps. So it's a few games in the Uruguayan top flight at Peñarol before he then moves to Almeria, moves very, very quickly there one season, and now it's what feels like one exceptional season, although he does get 14 all comps playing for Benfica at the season before, and he's moving again. But he's already got 139 appearances under his belt, which I think is worth considering. You know, he's in a position, I think, where they'll obviously feel as though he's ready to make a step up.
it's a massive step up from the season prior, but from what I can remember, he's got the 12 assists that year before, so he's able to contribute in those terms as well, depending on how the team set up around them. And that jump to then the 34 goals last season is phenomenal. And for what we've needed or what we felt short on this season, we've looked, the last 20 minutes in games where we just needed that little bit of difference, that bit of sharpness in the box. I'm so excited by this and how this has developed in the past few minutes. But yesterday I was a bit worried how this was going to turn out, because we've been in this situation a few times, and now suddenly Liverpool Football Club is the club that is in the Champions League, and we've had that for a while. Hopefully we'll get this over the line in the next few minutes, is how it feels.
It feels as though it's happening very quickly, Leanne. There's something around for me that the idea of the pin movement is something that's fascinating. There's a couple of times this season when Origi does get involved, and Liverpool look a different proposition. For a minute or two. I think that, for instance, it gets some of Salah's best and most creative moments come when Divock's on the pitch. And let's be clear about this, Divock's not on the pitch that much, but I can remember a couple of really, exceptional contributions from Salah around that. It does feel as though that's something more that we can unlock. And then within there as well, I think the idea of, if his work rate's right, which it was when he played us, and which, I think has been there in the bigger games that he's featured in, he's potentially so physically imposing that it can, because he's got the idea that not dissimilar to Divock Origi in a sense, the idea that he's not just very, very big and he's not just very, very quick. He is both. It makes him exceptionally difficult to defend potentially. And if the work rate's there as well and the touch can be worked on, he could be in great, great shape from a Liverpool point of view.
Yeah, and I think one of the good things as well is his movement. He's not afraid to go down the line, to stretch the play. And that's something that people have said, it's great to have a target man, but he's so much more than that. He's so much more versatile, as Philip has said. And what he will bring to Liverpool isn't just the hold-up play, bringing Salah into the game, bringing Mane, bringing Firmino into the game. It's what he can do on the ball and what he can do off of it. And I think that one of the crucial things as well is, as Philip has said, he's 22, he's got a lot of maturing to do, but Liverpool are buying a player that has shown so much promise, is raw and can be moulded into something more. And that has really been Klopp's MO at Liverpool. He's done that with Jota, he's done that with Salah, he's done that with so many players. And Liverpool are getting a player for the here and now, but also for the future, and someone that they can build this next attack around.
With the... What comes next, Philippa, around this is obviously part of this. It does look as though or feel as though it's linked very much to Sadio Mane moving on this summer. I don't think Liverpool will want to go into the season with six lads who all feel they should be starting in a front three position, which is where they would be if they kept Sadio Mane in the context of signing Nunes. I think that five plus Carvalho, Liverpool have made promises and assurances to Carvalho. I think that's where I see Liverpool making their move. That's what I see them doing around this. It'll be really, really sad to see Sadio go. But Liverpool, it feels as though, are going to be determined to maximise the value they can get out of Sadio Mane in terms of getting that move over to Bayern Munich.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just a bit of a, one of those people, I'm a bit too sentimental. So I always wanted to see Salah, Mane and Firmino basically end the careers at Liverpool. I wanted to see them out. But, if we're realistic and we want to continue to compete at the very top for a long period of time, then we do need to bring in fresh blood. And I think you're right that you can't necessarily do it all. You can't keep Mane and you can't, bring in new players as well, because somebody's going to end up upset. And it could potentially upset the kind of like the camaraderie in the dressing room as well, and that's something that we need to avoid. So I think that comes into it as well. If Mane, has made the noises, and Klopp's always said this when he first joined the club, that if a player makes noises that they want to leave the club, he's not going to stand in the way. And I think, I think that deal gets done. I'll be sorry to see Sadio leave. But it does feel like it's all interlinked, and if the Mane move doesn't happen, then I can't see Nunes coming in. But I think that if Nunes happens over the next 72 hours, then I expect that Mane gets done pretty quickly as well.
It's part of, I think, an evolutionary process, Michael. I think everyone in our minds, we've got this idea that there'll be a day where it'll go from one Jurgen Klopp Liverpool team, and then there'll be a big line drawn, and loads will leave, and loads will come in, and then there'll be another Jurgen Klopp team. But I think we've seen, you know, with the signing, if you look now off from the summer of 2020 after they win the league title, across effectively three seasons worth, they've completely renovated the front three. It starts with Jota. They've then added Diaz. Now it's Nunes. You know, it does feel as though Liverpool are going to be much more sort of evolutionary in this than the idea that there's just going to be like some sort of BC AD moment.
There was a fear in me past a year or so ago when we've seen there's a lovely little graph that someone had put together where it was a lot of the players and seeing their potential and had they peaked and their ages, and there was only Trent that was before that line at 22 when I seen this chart. Now suddenly adding like Canate and the Diaz sign, and Potter's come in and he's been fantastic for us, so we're finally starting to see that transition in develop in front of our eyes. And there's very little transition time as well, what I'd say, with the signings that we have made. It's not taken too long for Jota to bed in. It's not taken any time at all for Diaz to step in. He's come in and now he's, what, the eighth most valuable player in the world, or seemingly feels like overnight. So if we're going in after Nunes and we see the numbers, we see the club back him as well, then I think we're just making another step in that transition process.
Making a step in the transition process. For me, you know, with Nunes, I've got his shot map from last year playing for Benfica. Expected goals around 13.5, 19 goals in there. And that's from 77 shots over the course of the campaign. There's the four penalties as well over the course of the campaign. What's striking to me, Leanne, just sort of looking at it, is firstly, how much there is that we can sort of say is 6-yard box slash between the posts. It does pull a bit to the left, but even there, there's goals scored from that right-hand side channel as well. I think the versatility and the idea, as Philip has said before, of being able to mould him may well have appealed to Liverpool in this context.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the wide positions is something that's really key, because as we've seen this season, you know, with Mane playing in the centre-forward role, he likes to drift inside, he likes to drift outside. And having that flexibility in the front line is what has made Liverpool such a hard team to defend against. So Nunes, in that sense, kind of fits the bill. Being able to mould him and be able to progress those elements of his game is something that, as I said, Klopp is very good at as well. And you know, as we touched on, having someone that is so dangerous in the 6-yard box is probably something that Liverpool were missing a little bit this season. You know, Firmino's never been an archetypal number nine, kind of dangerous in the box, 30 goals a season type player. So the over-reliance on the likes of Mane, Salah and bridging that gap to transition to the next stage of the Liverpool attack is something that Liverpool have clearly identified, but also doing so and having a player that can play in the channels and play the way that the Klopp has built this team is really, really important. And I think, you know, as the shot map showed there, there's a lot of versatility to some of his long-range shots as well.
Okay, more and more to come on Nunes. Should the sign and break, there'll be stuff all the way across the Anfield Wrap. There'll be video, there'll be audio. Download the app and get stuck into it all. I've got a full stat show to come. That's where I just pulled that graphic from there, like magic, you know what I mean? It's not that the prep's endless. That's a different show that's being prepped for. It is all to come across the Anfield Wrap, and it feels as though it is all to come relatively quickly with Darwin Nunes. But in the comments here, Michael Early says, thought we were talking about the ladies' team. We are, Michael, we are. I promise you that. What's going to happen now, if you listen to this as a podcast, is we will flit over into Harriet Pryor talking to Emma Sanders around transfers, incomings and outgoings for Liverpool women as they get ready for their season back in the WSL. That is coming up there on Tour Live. And after that, there's Paul Dehaney, me talking to Paul about the wonderful Africa. Oh, yeah, get yourself down to that if you can. But if you're on Tour Live with us, what will happen now is that we will seamlessly go into what will be the fourth part of the show, which is Philip and Michael and Leanne looking back on an excellent season for Liverpool women in the Championship there. So we'll be with you to do that in 3, 2, and 1.
It's John Gibbons from the Anfield Wrap with an insert courtesy of Shopify. Now, this is a really easy one because we use Shopify a lot and have done for quite a number of years now, ever since we started selling our own merchandise. We use Shopify to build and sell, and it's been absolutely fantastic. So we are delighted that they're partnering with us now. And yeah, really easy endorsement, because any of you guys who've ever bought any merchandise from us will have done through our Shopify site. And now Shopify makes it simple for anyone to sell anywhere, from creating your own online shop in your look to finding new customers to scaling that burning idea from Shopify. You can do it all from one place with no need for skills in design or coding. I can definitely endorse that. I have very little in terms of skills, in terms of design and coding, but it all looks fantastic and it all looks really good, and they make it really easy for you. It's how every minute of every day a new seller makes their first sale with Shopify, and you can join them. Lots of brands at the moment are using it. A few here: Gymshark, Huel, Lounge, Misoma, Tropical Skincare, and of course the Anfield Wrap. And as I say, ever since we've started up with Shopify, it's been really easy to use. The back end's really sort of straightforward. It's dead easy to make changes, do things like sales, any marketing and things like that as well, and uploading new items and new t-shirts, and couldn't be easier. There's also 24/7 support, so if you do get into any trouble, Shopify is there to help you every step of the way. So if you want to sign up for a free 14-day trial at shopify.co.uk/wrap. So if you go to shopify.co.uk/wrap, that's all lowercase. Go there, you get a free 14-day trial, so you can have a bit of a play, see if it works for you. And I'm really, really confident that you will make a good go of it, just like we have. So thanks a lot to Shopify for partnering with us. Do have a look at our website and our merch if you haven't yet. But yeah, cheers to them for partnering with us and also allowing us to sell t-shirts all around the world.
We're now joined by the BBC's Emma Sanders to talk a little bit about Liverpool Women's season and also their summer plans. So Emma, first of all, just want to look at the basics here. Obviously, it's going to be a big step up going into the WSL from the Championship. What is the standard like? How much work are they going to have to do over summer to get prepared for the season ahead?
Yeah, it is a big jump. The Championship is a really competitive league in the women's divisions, but the WSL, that's where some of the world-class players are. It's where some of the best talent in Europe is. You've got the likes of Chelsea, Manchester City, Arsenal, who are right up there as kind of the recognised front three. And they've been leading the race for a while now. Manchester United are just starting to poke their nose in a little bit. But after those top four, really, there's a big gap between the other teams. And I think that's where Liverpool are going to have to make sure they're among those and be able to compete with those teams. There's always a bit of a scrap for relegation. It is just the one team who goes down. So you would like to think, with a little bit of boost in terms of investment and obviously Matt Beard's experience both in the transfer market and in the WSL, will help Liverpool stay above that relegation zone. But they just have to be able to compete with those other teams sort of below that top four, I think, for the first year or two, just while they consolidate their position in the WSL.
So do you think that's the aim for next season? It's not necessarily to build too much, but just to stay in the league, avoid relegation and build from there the seasons onwards?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that'll be the aim for the next maybe at least two seasons. I think that the gap between certainly Chelsea and Manchester City is so big compared to the rest of the league. That's something that they've been building since, you know, 2012, 2013. You know, that's long-term 10-year club ambitions. So for Liverpool to get to that point, they have a hell of a lot of work to do. And I think Matt and the rest of the board, Russ Fraser, who's obviously come in, who's got a lot of WSL experience as director of Leicester and West Ham, and obviously now taking up the women's director role at Liverpool, they've got big experience in the WSL, and they know that it's not going to happen overnight. So yeah, certainly consolidating their place in the WSL would be the first aim. Then it will be about sort of building squad depth and just being able to compete with those teams higher up in the table. And then once they get to a position where they can then compete in terms of match day basis with those top teams, then they can start thinking about silverware, I think, in the long term.
Yeah, and you mentioned the outgoings there and the squad depth. So we're going to look a bit at the players who they've already released. There's four so far: Michaela Moore, Evie Smith, Jade Bailey and Rhianna Dean. Were you surprised by any of those? Did any of those shock you, or they all sort of certified that they were going to go over the summer?
Yeah, I wasn't shocked by any. Jade Bailey, Michaela Moore, their contracts were coming to an end, and I think one of the centre-halves probably needed to leave the club. I think jumping up into the WSL, we probably needed a little bit more strength in that department. And that meant maybe offloading one of those, because we did have Several options in the centre-half position. And we do have a couple of players, you know, the likes of Meg Campbell, who's got an injury record. So I think we needed more cover there. So that meant releasing Michaela Moore. Jade Bailey, another player who has played in the WSL in midfield for Liverpool, didn't quite reach the heights that perhaps a lot of people thought she might have done with her potential coming through the Manchester City and Arsenal academies. So I think, yeah, she spent a long time at Liverpool and maybe the time has come for her to move on to new challenges. And Rhianna Dean was a striker who, again, we signed her on a short deal. She had a lot of injury issues when she was at Tottenham, came to Liverpool. She showed her talent quite early on. She's clearly a very good player. But then the injury issues came again and she ended up missing most of the season. So I think that was one of those where she just needs to go and get herself fully fit and Liverpool couldn't really afford to take the risk. And Evie Smith was a promising young player who, I think will go on and have a successful career in the Championship. But yeah, WSL is probably too soon for her. So wasn't surprised by any of those players leaving.
And do you expect anyone else to go over the summer or is that it now?
Yeah, I think that will be it. I know that Liverpool have been in talks over contract extensions with several of the key first team players, you know, the likes of captain Lee Fahey. I expect those to be announced anytime soon, really. I've kind of been expecting them for a while. I don't see any issues with any of those players. And then, yeah, I think it'll just be a case of getting those new transfers over the line. As far as I'm aware, three of the four targets that we have pretty much been wrapped up and signed and sealed now. So we'll just have to wait for those announcements.
Tell us a bit more about those targets, if you can.
Yeah, well, as far as I know, three of the four players that we were certainly looking at was goalkeeper Eartha Cummings, who was at Charlton Athletic in the Championship last season. She actually put in a very good performance
against us. Yeah.
Liverpool. Yeah, she was brilliant. So, we obviously needed a bit of a backup goalkeeper with Riley Foster suffering that horrific car accident and her to likely be out for the long term. So Rachel Laws has proven that she's been a wonderful keeper for Liverpool and I think she'll keep the number one shirt next season. And then Eartha, it sounds like she's probably going to be coming in as backup. Another big target, which I'm excited about, was Wolfsburg winger Shanice van der Sanden, whose contract at the German club actually runs out this summer. As far as I'm aware, she's not renewing it at Wolfsburg. And I know that Liverpool have been in talks with her for quite some time. So hopefully they were able to get that over the line. But as you can expect, she's probably got interest from several other clubs in Europe. So she has played at Liverpool before. She enjoyed her time here. She was wonderful while she was here. So hopefully she can come back to Merseyside. And then, yeah, another player is as I say, we were looking to try and strengthen in that centre-back department. And I know that Gilly Flaherty, who's just recently left West Ham, she was captain there, a real key member of their team, worked with Matt Beard and several of the other backroom staff from Liverpool during her time at West Ham. I know that she has been in talks with the club. But again, she's had interest from elsewhere. So it's whether or not they've been able to agree a deal and get that over the line. And then the fourth one is still a mystery. So, we'll have to wait and see. But I know certainly fullbacks were on the cards in terms of people that they were looking at and centre mids as well. So it's whether or not Matt's been able to target one of them.
And how big a draw do you think Matt Beard is working with him and being having the opportunity to have him as your manager?
Yeah, I think it's a big draw. Like I say, he's had lots of experience in the WSL. He's won two titles with Liverpool back in 2013, 2014. So he knows what it takes to win. He's obviously just won the Championship title, so he's shown he can win again. He's brought the squad together. I think that's something that's really big under him is about enjoying yourself and having fun. So I think a lot of these players that, like I say, are in that kind of middle table area in the WSL, if they're looking for a new challenge, then coming to somewhere like Liverpool where it's a huge club, there's massive expectations, you've got an experienced manager who encourages you to have fun. I think that is a big draw. So yeah, I think certainly with his links at West Ham and recently at Bristol City as well, he'll be a big draw for players coming in.
And is there any other areas that you think that Liverpool need to strengthen in and look to sign someone in particular positions or areas of the pitch?
I think those two that I mentioned before, the fullback and centre mid positions, I do think are areas that we could strengthen him. I think I prioritise the fullback, not because I don't think we've got good fullbacks. I just think the likes of Rhianna Roberts, Wales international, she's a very experienced fullback and she's been excellent for us recently. But then we obviously had Charlotte Wardlaw on loan from Chelsea, who did really well in the Championship this season, but she's returned back to her parent club. So I think we need cover there. So that'd be something I'd like to see. And in centre mid as well, we've got some fantastic midfielders, Kerry Holland, Rachel Furness and Missy Bo-Kearns in particular. But I do think with Rachel Furness sort of coming towards the end of her career, we could do with looking to the future and just bringing in someone who can provide a little bit of cover in that department as well.
Yeah, you mentioned some of the current players there. If you look at the squad at the moment, who do you think the key players are moving forward to next season and that really need to step up and be the biggest performers for looking ahead to the WSL?
Yeah, well, I know that in January when Matt signed American striker Katie Stengel,
that was great.
Yeah, brilliant. She did really well in her 6 months so far in the Championship, hit the ground running, scoring goals for fun. But that was very much a signing made for the WSL. They were looking towards the WSL with that signing. So there's a lot of expectation and probably a little bit of pressure on her to continue those performances in the WSL. So I think she's one player that really needs to step up. And hopefully she can, you know, as I say, continue the form that she showed, certainly in the first 6 months. And then again, the likes of Missy Bo-Kearns and I think Kerry Holland in midfield, Missy was very young the last time Liverpool were in the WSL. I think she's matured hugely the past year or two while being in the Championship, and she's grown to become one of Liverpool's key players in midfield. And Kerry Holland as well was signed and didn't really get to show what she could do in the WSL. So I'm looking forward to seeing those two make that step up, and hopefully they can make the step up with it.
And finally, you mentioned the contract extensions there. Who are Liverpool looking at to extend their contracts at the moment?
Oh, off the top of my head. I think Mel Lawley was one who they were hoping to sign on. You've got Leanne Robe in defence. I think she'll be looking to sign a new deal. And Captain Niamh Fahey as well, again, centre-back that they'll be looking to keep on. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else.
You've done well off the top of your head. I'm putting you on the spot here.
Yeah, I think those three were certainly three of the main sort of first team players yet to get over the line.
Great. Well, we can't wait to watch Liverpool in the WSL back where they belong next season. Thank you so much, Emma, for coming on and chatting to us. And we'll probably do another one of these nearer the end of the window to see what Liverpool have been up to. But thanks, Emma.
You'll have heard Paul Dehaney talking with us about Tottenham Hotspur for many a year. Every now and again, he has to talk about the day job, and it's always a pleasure to hear about the day job. Paul has been running out of Liverpool, the biggest free African music festival in the country, for also many a year. But things have changed, obviously, because there's been a pandemic. Would you class yourselves out of practice?
Definitely. I was just telling you before, I just remembered to order a stage today, but I was actually joking. But yeah, there is a lot of double and treble checking, and even is there such thing as quadruple checking? You know, because we've not done it for so long, it's really important that we don't get anything wrong, especially as times have changed as well in terms of legislation, logistics, yep. et cetera. So that's boring.
It is boring. We'll crack on. No, I'm just entertained. I'm entertained. Our listeners, I'm always entertained by the idea of, and someone just said upstairs, tell you what, Paul, you look under pressure as you came in there. Yeah. You don't
I've come in for
rocks.
A break. Honestly, I don't want. Somebody said to me, how's the festival going? And my face just dropped. It's like, I don't want to talk about that right now. I want to talk about football.
But, you know. Here we are. We are here to do it. Listen, let's be really, really clear about this. It will be brilliant. It's always brilliant. It's the 18th and 19th of June in Sefton Park this year. It will be happening 18th and 19th of June. We'll go into the specific artists in a minute, but it has become more than just about the music. The music is the centre of it, Paul, but there's so much else that lights Sefton Park up, makes it absolutely fantastic, and it'll be great to have it back this year. I'm obviously talking to some extent about the food.
Yeah, of course. But I mean, the place where it takes place in Sefton Park, it actually celebrates its 150th anniversary this year. It's our 30th anniversary. There's no better setting in Liverpool really for a festival, and for this particular festival it just almost seems a natural fit, the way that we have the stalls and traders running yep. around the outside, running in conjunction with the tree line. I'm getting all sort of scenic here.
It's good.
But then obviously we have the main stage, we have a couple of DJ stages, fun fair, workshops, free workshops 2 days. So yeah, what more could you want?
What more could you want? The core of it is, though, is showcasing the music, and you know it's been going for 30 years. I'm talking to you now. You've actually got it'll be done after this. But a band, actually, I know, I've listened to called the Durdur Band from Somalia playing in the Philharmonic. The point about this is that what you're doing now at OEA, it is also all year round. It isn't just about the festival. It's about showcasing so much of this fantastic music. So the Durdur Band, if you don't know, if you haven't heard them, they are very much worth listening to. I'm annoyed I'm away tomorrow night. They play this sort of quite unique sort of disco funkish sound.
Yeah,
but it's
Somalian twist.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, it's a bit Parliament, but it's not quite, and it's loads and loads of interesting little things going on in there. The point though is that right the way across the board, you've been championing this, showcasing this stuff now for 30 years and bringing it to Liverpool once a year, but now it's much greater than just once a year.
Yeah, I think that's more to do with demand as well, because after the festival, a lot of people might not have heard these bands before, get into the bands, and they want more, and they want more music that they don't know. I think people's perceptions on music have completely changed in the internet age, where it's almost like, instead of everybody trying to conform with and follow one type of music, it's like people are like, what can I find that's different? What can I find that's new? What can I find that's interesting? And I think Africa OEA kind of, it's a bit like Jules Holland in that respect, where you just find some gems every now and again that you want to follow up on. So we've continued to do gigs all year round. We've been partnering places like the Philharmonic District, what's the one over the water? Future Yard,
yeah.
Yeah, so I think that it's something that we can extend on. There is a ticket buying audience out there. We know the festival's free, and obviously to help keep the festival free, gigs like that help to support the festival. Just on that note, on the 31st of July, we've got a brilliant event called Havana Meets Kingston, which is kind of says what it is on the tin. It's a Cuban Jamaican hybrid, sort of reggae dancehall meets Cuban song, all together on one stage, all different performers. That's in the Philharmonic main hall, and that's on the 31st of July, and you can get tickets from the Philharmonic for that. But back to the festival, and you mentioned Uma Zangari.
Yeah, I definitely have heard Uma Zangari, definitely, yeah. No shadow of a doubt. I think that maybe something, was an album called Magoya or something like that a few years back, yeah.
She's done, she's Grammy nominated, she's done stuff with Beyonce, you know, she's a star in her own right, one of the biggest stars in world music of any genre, of any gender. So we're delighted to have her, because that's a real coup for us. And, you know, she's going to be brilliant. She's playing on Sunday night headlining. And then we've got sort of Fuse ODG for a bit more of a younger audience. But he's playing with a live band, which will be amazing.
Yep.
And I've seen that before on Jules Holland. I keep referencing Jules Holland. He needs to pay me. and then also Santrafi, who are a high life band from Ghana. I think all the bands we got on this year they're going to make people dance, got a lot of energy.
Is that what you wanted this, given the fact that it's the 30 years, yeah, but also given the fact that there's obviously been circumstances why we've not been able to dance? Was that the thought process?
It's definitely about having a party this year, you know, because people are, you know, everywhere we get inquiries and comments every day saying they can't wait, and they've been waiting for this for 2 years, and you know, it's all about partying. They want to dance all the way through, so the programming definitely represents that this year. We've got a band from Chile, believe it or not, called New and Afrobeat, and they've worked with the likes of Fela Kuti and Femi Kuti and Femi Kuti and Sean Kuti, who they're kind of like the forefathers of Afrobeat, and this band's almost like been, you know, what's the word?
Endorsed.
This band's been endorsed by the likes of those, and you know, I think people are just going to be amazed by the colours and the vibrancy that they're going to see on stage this year.
Other stuff is in there as well. You mentioned the idea of, you know, people being amazed by the vibrancy, by the colours, dancing as well. It's very, very family friendly. Oh yeah, that's one of the things I've noticed. Loads and loads of workshop sort of stuff goes on, bits and pieces of craft. It isn't just the food. There is other stuff that goes on as well. It says in the post this year, there's both a village and an active zone. What can people expect from that?
So in the active zone, that's run by a local organisation called MoveMa, and they program activities all through the day. which are all free, you know, everything from capoeira to yoga. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all about health and well-being and getting people out of their comfort zone, you know, and you that's funny to see when you walk past where people seem a bit, you know, enter it with a bit of trepidation, and then by the end of it they're yep. dancing their heads off. And that's the sort of thing you want to create, you know, just people letting off. And also on the main stage, what I didn't mention is we also support, we've been doing this for a few years now, Oye Introduces, which is where we look at local acts and try and give them a platform on stage. So the likes of Nee Maxine, who's a brilliant young jazz artist coming through, DJ Two Kinds doing something with the L100 Cypher, and also Stage Chaos. So, you know, we make sure that the community is involved, even though that the main program is international.
Okay, excellent. So it is, let's just be very, very clear, I'm not going to give you a link for a ticket, I don't need to, it is free admission. It is Saturday the 18th and Sunday the 19th of June. It's at Sefton Park. On those days, it starts at 12:30, it finishes at 9:30, which is a wonderful time if you have family responsibilities. And if you don't have family responsibilities, it sets up your evening wonderfully. It is worth pointing out. So 18th and 19th of June, Saturday and Sunday, free admission down at Sefton Park. It's always a pleasure to have Paul.
Oh, one more thing. LFC are going to be down there. Liverpool Football Club are going to be down there running some football workshops.
Are they?
Yeah.
What's the age limit?
There isn't. So I'll see you there.
Yeah. Me and Paul will be doing bits. Maybe that should be on the poster. 18th and 19th of June, 12:30 till 9:30. It is free admission. It is, oh yeah, it is 30 years. It's always a pleasure to speak to Paul. Get yourself down, get yourself along, enjoy it. Father's Day is on the horizon, and the good people at Manscaped are looking to box off not just your present for Father's Day, but also all the fathers in particular, getting them all ship-shape and ready to rock and roll. It is Manscaped Performance Package 4.0. It includes their signature lawnmower 4.0. It says here it is the perfect bundle to tackle any and old, in inverted commas, old man hair from head to toe. I wonder at what point old man hair becomes, well, hair moves from being hair to becoming old man hair. Maybe there need to be regular checkups. It could be the sort of thing the NHS could tell you about. This here is the real deal. So you can treat him and or yourself. I may well treat myself to join the 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer. We can get 20% off and free shipping if you use the code WRAP, W-R-A-P, at manscaped.com. And we will go from there. Obviously, fathers, and I'm sure a lot of you are listening are fathers, either fathers of children or fathers of dogs or cats or something. And, you know, it can feel as though at times you're the butt of many a joke, the fathers in these scenarios, and certainly the butt of jokes I'd make. I'm not one myself and don't even have a dog or a cat, although I'd love a dog, it is fair to say. But time and job make that sort of thing very, very difficult. So if you would like to sort of reclaim hair and your general grooming from this, then Manscaped 4.0 could well be the thing. It is designed around the idea of the slightly older gentleman, the 4.0 offer. And by the slightly older gentleman, that does include me. I am 41. You'll be able to find the lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, the weed whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, crop preserver ball deodorant, crop reviver tone, and these boxer briefs that have very much got my attention. They give you a travel bag, but I'm nowhere near aware enough to plan for that sort of thing. But there are these boxer shorts that could well be the best boxer shorts ever, which, as I say, I am very, very, very intrigued by, because they're very much about the idea of everything being breathable. And as we approach into June, breathable becomes ever more important. So the Lawnmower 4.0 will be the official standout of Father's Day if you nail it all. It's got a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents, and there is the advanced skin-safe technology that they use there. It's waterproof as well, and it has a 400K LED spotlight for a more precise shave. Let's stop using the same trimmer for our face and our body. I mean, genuinely, do stop doing that under all circumstances. It's time to upgrade this sort of thing. So whatever you're up to over the summer, this sounds like it might do for you. If you're looking for a present for a father, then feel free to dive in. But I always say at this time of year, and at Christmas and at all times of year, always buy yourself a present as well. This stuff is important. So everyone deserves to have a go at this. It's 20% off. It's free shipping. It's manscaped.com. You use the code WRAP. That'll be the absolute business for you. Get yourself sorted out. Get yourself all ship shape all the way over the summer. Use Father's Day as an excuse. You deserve to be gleaming. You deserve to be pristine. You deserve to be perfect come July. Manscaped.com. The code is WRAP. Enjoy yourselves. Head of the Cough, Andy. It's 13:30. Absolutely pure as anything. 13:30 feels like a great time in order to do it. And we are going to move on and we are going to talk about the fantastic season from Liverpool women. Philippa, the thing to remember, in the same way as when we talked about the men's team this season, the thing that needs to be remembered is the pressure and the fact that it felt so imperative and it felt as though the previous season had gone so badly wrong. It wasn't like they came eighth in the championship or anything, but it had started relatively promisingly and tapered away. The pressure that was on Liverpool's women's team this year, you know, it's now easy to remember them on the bus and remember them looking oh so happy. But if you go all the way back to the start of the campaign, it really felt like it was do or die for them. And that's why, you know, for me, you couldn't praise them highly enough for the way they've responded.
Yeah, I think the way they carried that weight, I think, was what probably impressed me most, especially after losing that first game as well. I think that only ramped up the pressure. And then they had what everybody would have taken to be an easy 3 points away at Watford, which, you know, they stormed into the lead there, but then got clawed back, only ended up winning 3-2. But the most important thing there was the fact that they got 3 points on the board. You know, it got them off the mark and it got the players kind of moving forward, should we say. And I think without that result at Watford, the rest of what happened in the season kind of doesn't happen. And I think it's really important there because, you know, Rhianna Dean, that was probably her one and only, you know, thing that she contributed to that season. But I think without the contribution from her, the rest of it doesn't happen. And I think it's, you know, we need to acknowledge the part that all of the players played in the season. It wasn't just, you know, the stars that have ended up taking all the awards. You know, your Leanne Kiernans, your Taylor Hines, your Rachel Laws. You know, pretty much everybody contributed to that season and all the backroom staff as well. You know, there was a lot of work to do there with that side. Like you say, the scars from the season before and even, you know, the season before that, there was a lot of players that was there in that team that got relegated.
Yeah.
And then to go through kind of like it almost felt like a mess that first season in the championship. There was no cohesion. There was no real, you couldn't really see what they were trying to do for me. And then to basically go through the whole of that season without having the new manager in place, they went into the summer. And obviously Matt came in and you kind of felt like they might need that season to kind of really gel together and to really understand what Matt wanted them to do. But it really felt like after three or four games that they kind of understood what was expected of them and what Matt wanted them to do. And they just went on this 20-game unbeaten run that basically, you know, cemented that they were by far the best side in the championship. And, you know, that was what happened when you saw the table at the end of the season. They basically, every time they came up against a side that, you know, you felt was their main opposition, they blew them away. And, you know, I can't speak more highly for how they took on that pressure, like you say, and you know, they kind of spit it out and did what they needed to do.
Did within that, Matt himself comes in under pressure as well, Leanne. I think one of the things that happens and shifts over the course of the campaign, there was a situation where he ends up with not quite a force, but he makes a formation change. And that formation change then carries them through so much of the rest of the campaign. You know, by the time we get to the very end of the season, there's moves back occasionally to a four. But the 3-4-3, I think it really helped Liverpool ensure that they were ruthless at both ends of the pitch. They could overload in attack, they could overload in defence, and a lot of that came down to the superior fitness that they had in the wing-back positions and in the heart of that midfield against most championship sides, that they were able to give and go in terms of what the game needed at any given time.
Yeah, I think in particular, Taylor Hines really benefited from that formation change. I think she's probably one of my favourite players in terms of the way she applies herself at both ends of the pitch.
Yeah.
And I think also the tactical flexibility of it was a 3-4-3 sort of in possession and a 3-5-2 out of possession. Every player knows exactly what their job is. And as Philippa said, you know, the amount of planning that goes into those tactical changes, to do that over the course of a summer when there was a lot of change in terms of arrivals, departures, it brought out a new element of this Liverpool team. I do think there's an element probably that, you know, Matt Bibb maybe benefited from the fact that last season went so badly that the players knew what what the season and this pressure that they were facing was going to bring. But the way that the team has developed, both tactically and in terms of, you know, the collective sense of every player has a part to play, everyone knows their job within this system, has been really impressive. And I think it's something that sets Liverpool up really well for next season as well. It's hopefully a system that we keep going with in the WSL and, you know, want to attack teams rather than play a very defensive approach.
Does within it, Michael, the other part that the other thing that happens is Liverpool also suddenly get the supporters back. And so does every other team in the Championship, obviously. But it felt like that mattered more. And simultaneously, there was a commitment to just to get people to Prenton Park, to get people to feel part of it, which I think, you know, it just doubled, tripled, quadrupled the enjoyment that everyone was able to get out of this women's team. And I think that as the winning run begins, the idea of there being supporters around, it added to the pleasure. You got the impression the team were getting game after game after game.
There's always been, yeah, the consistent supporter base there, but then having the fans back and seeing 700, 800 at Prenton Park and then see that getting over the 1,000 mark at times throughout the season was fantastic. And like being a part of that crowd with like Seth Thilpa and Leander and yourself going to those games, you could see the difference it made, the chance that everyone's got for all the individual players. There's such a brilliant atmosphere that's created by the supporters for this brilliant team. And it only just amplified and got bigger and bigger, and the momentum started to build not only from the terraces there, but then you could see it reflected in the performance from the players. And that 20 game winning streak doesn't happen by the fans turning up at Prenton Park either. Those people, a lot of people have been home and away to support this women's team, and they've taken the same sort of numbers away to the likes of Blackburn, to the likes of Bristol towards the end of the season. It's been fantastic throughout.
It feels like certain players came to the party at key times. So Len Kiernan's a really good example of it, where Liverpool, you know, Philip has mentioned Rhianna Dean having struggles with injury. Leanne then absolutely goes through the middle, plays number 9, and all of a sudden she just can't stop scoring. It's game after game. She's scoring goals, key goals. She's scoring goals to turn 2-0 into 3-0. She's scoring and scoring and scoring. And it feels as though, you know, that is very much the catalyst for what gets Liverpool on the winning run through the autumn that ultimately blows the league apart.
Yeah, and then we see like a Stengel then step in and see how dynamic the team can be, and seeing Kiernan move position and sometimes it didn't look too comfortable for her, but then in the end they sort of worked it out between themselves on the pitch, and it there'd be games where when they're both getting on the score sheet, and the numbers from Stengel, I think is it 7 or 8 goals towards the end of the season with a short spell. So it just gets you then excited for what they can do together up front going into the WSL.
Chris in the comments, Philippa mentions as well, Kerry Holland, the key player to the formation change, the engine in the middle of the park. Again, I think in the autumn, especially when the formation was bedding down, certain big games, Durham away being an example where Kerry Holland was just first to everything. Everything that came near her, she was absolutely all over. Leanne's rightly praised Taylor Hines already in terms of what she does in that formation. But it felt to me as though there was a long run there through the autumn and even into sort of February where Liverpool's first choice midfield was Kerry Holland plus one.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was interesting. You know, Matt seemed to have this tactic as well with his midfielders where he would basically tell them to go all out for 60 minutes and then he would substitute them off and put fresh legs on. And I think that's down to how much work they were expected to do in there as well. And, you know, Kerry Holland was the antithesis of that. You know, she basically, you know, would go box to box for like 60 minutes. And I think if it wasn't for the fact, I think she had quite a bad outbreak of COVID at one point. I think we'd have seen her at the end of the season as well doing exactly the same thing. And it was only because of that she kind of ended up coming out a little bit, and we ended up more with like a Kearns and Furness midfield towards the back end of the season. But, you know, without, you know, Holland basically showing everybody how to play that role, I don't think, you know, we would have kind of carried on in the same vein for the rest of the season. But I mean, like I said before, you know, pretty much everybody contributed to that. You know, even Jade Bailey, when she came in, she did a really good job. And, you know, I know she's now left the club, but, you know, again, somebody who played her part within that season as well. And, you know, we needed everybody at certain points. Like I say, you know, with COVID, you just never know when somebody's going to go down, basically. So to have players of real quality able to come in, you know, that really did help us. And you was right to point out as well before about, you know, the levels of our fitness. And I think Kerry Holland kind of, you know, amplifies that. And, you know, her level of fitness at the early part of the season was just phenomenal.
We mentioned players coming in and out. Some who've contributed a little bit, some who've contributed over the course of the season. Leanne, the player who, for me, I felt you watched grow and grow and grow as the season wore on was Mel Lawley. Mel ends up being, at times, at the level of the Championship, verging on unplayable. You know, opponents are backing off her just continually. She's bursting into space. She can go left, she can go right. Began to add more and more goals to the games. You know, she's, for me, it felt as though Mel Lawley's contribution really underpinned what was so good about this Liverpool attack. There was obviously the dynamite work of Stengel, as has been mentioned as well, and of Keenan as well. There was the dynamite work that they were able to do when the ball was around the penalty area. But getting Liverpool from 40 yards away from goal to 10 yards away from goal was massively down to Mel Lawley.
Yeah, I think in many ways she kind of summarises the team. She's energetic, her work rate is brilliant, she's creative, she's got a little bit of flair, she can take on a player, she can shoot from distance. She sort of summarised the season, and for me the amount of growth that Liverpool have made probably in the last year and a half, because I think there was obvious disappointment when Liverpool went down to the Championship, and maybe a little bit of naivety about what the sort of level of the Championship was going to be. But Mel Lawley this season and so many players in this team have now sort of acclimatised to what's required, the expectation, the level that Liverpool can play at. And now she's showing her best football and this team is showing their best football. And for me, I think she's going to be a really important player for Liverpool next season. I think, as we were saying about Kerry Holland and her work rate there, for me, Mel Lawley was just as sort of integral to the whole system. I think there's a couple of players that are really, really important for the 3-4-3 to work. And for me, it's her, it's Kerry Holland and Taylor.
Philippa, the next sort of phase of this is going to be with one eye on next season. I'll move on to that in a second. But the three centre-backs, I think all the different times, whoever it is who gets dropped into those roles, they all contribute massively as well. For a long period, I felt at the start of the back three, Leanne Robe was unbelievably important for her ability to step into midfield and turn the three into back being a more sort of conventional four for a couple of minutes as play was sort of moving through. But overall, by the end of the season, everyone who ended up playing in the three centre-halves at the back, they all do contribute tactically very, very clearly to what Matt Beard wanted.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the start of the season, you kind of wondered, you know, how we were going to, you know, develop the team. You felt like we were kind of relying a lot on Nifahi. And I think, you know, if there's one thing that I'll say, you know, she's a great organiser of people. But I would say that she probably lacks a little bit of pace. And I think what having the three centre-backs gave us was just that extra bit of cover. And you could get a bit more, I don't know, kind of flexibility in there as well. So somebody there has mentioned about Meg Campbell, and I think being able to get her into the side as well towards the back end of the season with her long throws was a massive thing.
And Cairns to set pieces as well in general. Liverpool used everything they had. There was, you know, there's Meg Campbell's long throws and there's Cairns' delivery from set pieces.
Yeah, I think if there was one criticism that we had of this Liverpool side the season before was that we were a bit too one-dimensional. And I think that was something that we really developed this season was, you know, we were dangerous. We had a threat from every single possible angle that you could think of, you know, whether it was set pieces, like you say, Mel Lawley as well. Yana Daniels also contributed a lot as well from the left-hand side, or, you know, she even played at right wing-back at times as well. You know, just have that flexibility throughout the whole of the side, and pick basically any three centre-backs from a pool of five, I think was really, really important. And it meant that, you know, it keeps everybody on the toes as well, because you never know who Matt's going to favour in each match. You know, Yaz Matthews for me was a standout this season as well. I think bringing her in from Bristol City was an absolute masterstroke, to be honest. You know, she's just that calming influence at the back for me, and was a really good distributor of the ball. So it's going to be interesting to see if we do stick with the three centre-backs in the WSL, or whether or not Matt feels he'll need a bit more in midfield. Because I think that's something that maybe, you know, with the cleverer sides, you might get a little bit overloaded in the midfield. So it's going to be interesting to see what he does there. But I think with Taylor Hines and the way that she's kind of like developed her forward play, she could maybe play left midfield, and you could go to a back four and have Meg Campbell as your left back as well. So it's pretty much the same personnel, but just used in a slightly different way.
Just on the last thing that happens as the season wears on, Mike, is effectively at the key moments, it felt to me, suddenly, all of a sudden, Rachel Furness is there to drag them over the line. A couple of really big goals in one game. The number of appearances she gets and the regularity of it grows as the season wears on. She's obviously had a couple of injury issues in there, but when she was needed, there she was. And I think that that's a testament to her, but also, again, testament to the way the squad has both managed, been managed and also managed itself.
Absolutely terrific towards the end of the season. It was just fantastic to watch. You could, with the ground being at Prenton, you can hear her. You can hear her everywhere as well. You, whatever you've got, yeah, you've got Fahey on the pitch, but you've got the same messaging being produced from the midfield as well. And it's Furness giving it loads to everyone and make sure everyone's organised. And some of the performances there have just been outstanding. For me, there's key moments where I just remember just being able to like concentrate on her and watching her sort of dictate these games, essentially, because it's what we needed. Yes, we've got fantastic players all around the pitch, but the organisational skills, the legacy that she has in the game, she just carried that all the way through. And towards the end of the season, when we needed it most, just to get over the line, because sometimes it can creep in, sometimes yeah, the nerves can creep in, and we've had those players there with their experience to just do what mattered in the moments, the key moments when we needed it most. And she's been there all season, been fantastic.
And the one who, more than anyone else, Philippa, throughout the whole of the season, is genuinely outstanding week in, week out, the goalkeeper. And she's going to be so important for next season as well, Rachel Laws. It's just tremendous performances, game in, game out, unbelievably brave when called upon on a few occasions. But the sheer quality, the quality of the kicking, finding those angles, again, making the 3-4-3 work by virtue of a distribution. I thought she was incredible, genuinely. For me, she ends up being, I think there was different points where different players were exceptional. We've sort of cited them as we've gone, but over the long haul of all games that she ends up having to play, for me, Rachel Laws was Liverpool Women's Player of the Year.
Yeah, I think she got voted the Players' Player of the Year as well, and I think that tells you...
Well, they know what they're doing.
Exactly. It tells you everything that you need to know. And also, I mean, we mustn't forget what happened to Riley Foster in the season, and that, you know, where you was going to kind of like share that workload between the two of them, it ended up basically being Rachel Laws, and there was times that she was having to play with Knox, and yeah, she did it, and you just didn't see any drop-off in her performance at all. I agree. She was my player of the season. I think without her and her communication from the back, I think the rest of the team can't do what they do. And then at key moments, she came, pulled off some massive saves. I mean, the one that really stands out for me is away at Charlton. You know, we really struggled in that game to get any sort of like control on the game, and she pulled off an incredible save in the first half that basically kept us in it, really, because you could see if Charlton had got a goal, they'd have gained confidence and we'd have struggled. And then that gave us the basis then to basically go on and nick a goal at the end of the second half and take the 3 points. And I think that was probably the time where I thought, right, yeah, we're going to win the league. But without, you know, Laws's contribution, I don't think it happens this season. You know, we did need her at crucial times.
Leanne, then, beginning to look towards next season, the step up, and let's be, you know, quite clear about it, is absolutely massive. There's both internal step-ups within the WSL itself. There's not just the step-up from Championship to WSL, but within there, it looks to be a division that's broken into three chunks, but you have to play everyone. And, you know, I saw Chelsea's final game of the season against Manchester United. And I felt if Chelsea had needed to win that game 8-2, they'd have won 8-2. They were that much better than Manchester United. And United finished fourth in the WSL over the course of the season. it is going to be tough for them, isn't it? You know, they're going to, Emma's talked about, you know, potential ins and outs on this show already, but they are going to have to make a few changes in there, to say the least, because we do need to be prepared for the fact that they are going up to a whole new level.
Yeah, I think it will be interesting, as Philip has said, to see how Liverpool approach it. Obviously, the 3-4-3 has worked very well this season. I expect Liverpool will probably maintain that formation against the kind of bottom chunk of the three that you're talking about there. But against the likes of Chelsea, United, there's going to be a need for a more robust midfield. The energy of the likes of Kerry Holland is going to be so important, and the experience of the likes of Rachel Furness is something that Liverpool are going to have to rely very heavily on. I think the way that the team approach it will be with confidence, and I just hope that we kind of stick to our guns and take the game to the opposition, because obviously you're talking about the difference between the Championship and the WSL. One of the key things that the likes of Aston Villa have found is, you know, you're so dominant in the Championship, you go up to the WSL and it's a different kettle of fish entirely. And I think Liverpool, and how well the club have done over the last year, the next massive step is to just ensure that next season we stay in the WSL. I don't think it's a case of, you know, looking for a top four finish or anything like that. It is literally just at this point solidifying our position in that league and building from there.
As part of that, though, Mike, there's an opportunity for the club now to look at maybe getting a couple of games at Anfield next season, not least because there's no game at Anfield from the 13th of November until the 21st of December. We can say that with certainty. There can't be one. So it'd be great, wouldn't it, in terms of this journey that we've been on together as supporters and with these players. The women were part of the parade. It'd be great if there was a game at Anfield, and maybe even more than one next season.
As you say, there's opportunity there for it, and as it's happened in the past with the Merseyside derby, people will turn up. If you put it at Anfield, there'll be good numbers there, and it's only good for the team. It's only good for this game that we're doing at the moment. We've got to get good numbers at Prenton Park from the start of the season, yeah. And we will do. And there'll be strong support there. But yeah, there's plenty of time now, and plenty of time to put pressure on the club essentially to make sure we've got one or two at Anfield, because it's just that I think it's the respect thing. We've got to get as many opportunities there in front of as many crowds, because we're seeing numbers treble, quadruple for the WSL this year, from like the numbers coming out of the BBC, that they're seeing that their audiences only
grow,
boom,
and grow.
Grow and grow. And with the off the back of the Euros happening over the next few months, like we'll see plenty of opportunities, people to get behind the different players, different people that be showing up in the WSL. And so why not give them the platform that they deserve?
The idea, Philippa, you know, in the comments there, someone's pointed out, you know, Barcelona sold out 91,000. The parade is important, I think, in amongst all of this, first and foremost, not least because for potential new signings, Liverpool are able to say, well, if you come and be part of what we're doing, there's the potential of being part of this at the end of a campaign as well, which is remarkable. But the acclaim that the bus got as it went round, within that, I think it's a massive step forward in order to do the next thing, which is to get a game at Anfield, get more than one game at Anfield, and be really, really ambitious with it. The issue with that, though, is that Liverpool people, Liverpool supporters will want to see a side that is capable of competing week in, week out as well. That is important. No one wants to watch a Liverpool team get whacked, as happened to Leicester this season. That is going to be a big part of this. But if it all comes together, there's just this journey that we've started all together. It feels as though it could grow and grow across the next 2, 3, 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, I was really pleased, actually, you know, that we got the women on the parade. I know it wasn't quite as big as what I hoped, because obviously a lot of the players had gone off to join up with their international sides, or they were on holiday. And that's just purely because of when the women's season finished to when the parade actually was. You know, you can't anticipate that, you know, those things are going to happen, I guess. But, you know, they deserve to be there. You know, they wouldn't have been there if they hadn't have won the league.
Yep.
You know, let's be clear about that. You know, it wasn't a token gesture. They deserve to be there. And I think it is really important. I think it's important that, you know, Michael, you know, brought up there about the Euros, that we use that as well, as, you know, a showcase for the best players in Europe. And, you know, that we say to people, you know, you can come to Anfield, you can come to Prenton Park, and you can see these players playing week in, week out. You know, I'm massive on trying to, you know, grow the number of spectators that we've got women watching the women's game. You know, Prenton Park isn't a small stadium. You know, we can, from in my opinion anyway, we can fill that. No. I'd like to see us do that. You know, any games that aren't being played at Anfield, I would like to see us be able to completely pack out Prenton Park, to get every stand open. You know, and they are big ambitions, and it, you know, it might be 3 or 4 years before we get to that point, but you know, we have to aim for that sort of thing. You know, the women's team deserve to have big crowds watching them. And it's been an absolute joy this season, you know, to basically see, you know, the group of fans. You know, when I first started going this season, there was only 3 or 4 of us sitting together. And by the end of it, you know, there was 50 to 100 people all sat together, all joining in with the chants. And, you know, it's huge, that. And, you know, the club putting on these coaches for away fans, yep, as well, that's something that they're also looking into for next season. And all of that helps to get people properly involved, and, you know, kind of get that connection with the side that, you know, that we all have for the men's side. And, you know, I've now got it for the women's side. And the more people that go, they'll start to get that connection, and, you know, they'll want to watch them home and away, and hopefully at some point in Europe as well. And, you know, that's the ambition of the club. You know, Matt's, you know, managed to get us to win the WSL twice before. There's no reason why we can't go on that journey again and get to that point again, in my opinion.
Okay, excellent stuff indeed. Thank you very much to Michael, to Leanne and to Philippa, Andy for producing, Paul Dehaney, Harriet Pryor and Emma Sanders all in there as well over the course of this tour live. Thank you for joining us on YouTube. Thank you very much for the comments all the way through. It's been a pleasure to be part of this Liverpool women's season. It's been a pleasure to be part of every single aspect of it on and off the pitch, and it was tremendous to see those women be part of that parade. As Philippa said, they wouldn't have been there if they didn't deserve it. My God, did they deserve it. See you later. Sports Social Podcast Network.